I'm Rob.
I'm E.
I'm Roper.
Welcome to the next movement, folks.
Y'all, believe in me, kill all idols, though the roll pedestals fall from the walls. We've been falling out for weeks, holding my arm out for the week. The meat gain no compromise, considered cozy within heat through frigidity, BG. I can chill out, you chillin' wearing a steep tech. It's a waste of manna to compete, conserve yours if they suggest to do with water. I hate to get involved, cause once I'm revved up, they gon' have to revive somebody. Halt the point in this conflict, we write the sound waves. Every move made, mode, state of flux, maintain, planets quake, start shake. There's no such thing as something that happens for no reason in its own way. What passes and what'll pass us by is all meant to be. Trees, not even a thought to those possessing integrity. Onward towards infinity and beyond. You see what we are, past what are yawn on. The arrival always strong, I'm not here for what's right, only you. I'm alright with being wrong, I'm like you, stay in the water. Fish is warded off like unfortunate karma. The spirit of my comrade realigning. Next on the path, most resistance, I only get more karma.
Roper, good to catch up with you. We had an opportunity to meet face-to-face earlier this year, I guess that was, at a show with Sharif. So
Yeah. That show was fire.
Yeah, that was a great night. We had a great time. Thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
No doubt, man. It was an excuse to talk about, you know, one of my favorite albums, so it's fun.
Yeah, we'll definitely get into that, but we're going to talk a little bit about you and Roper Williams and the production that you have put out. We were talking a bit about this off mic, but I just want to start out by asking for some clarification, because I was caught off guard. I was reading a review of the new project, Infinite Victory Loop, and in this review, they refer to Roper Williams as a duo. I messaged E and I was like, I was introduced to Roper and there was one person there. Like, I don't get it. So could you educate us? Could you clarify?
Yeah. It's a duo. It's Roper. It's basically Roper and Williams. You know what I mean? Like, I think Josh from Grandma Sophie's, I think he knows us through the other half, through Sands. So most people don't know, you know what I mean? But it's not something that I necessarily hide. It's just, I'm just like, yo, I'm Roper, you know?
Yeah, I was going to ask you, do you feel like people know this? Is it generally known or not really?
You know what I'm saying? Some people know, you know, the people I work with know, obviously. It's not exactly advertised, but it's just, I don't know. I feel like a bunch of people don't know. I feel like I would say a large percentage of people don't realize that it's two people.
Including us, where we are.
Yeah.
It's new information to us. But I'm glad we're getting a chance to talk about it. I think it's going to bring perhaps a whole new dimension to our interview this evening. But that's cool.
I low-key enjoy that it fucks with people like that. Like, like I have projects, like I'm working on a project with Lungs and he's never met Sans. Like he's telling me Sans don't exist. Sans is the other half of Roper, like, you know what I mean? Yeah. So it's hilarious. Like, it really is hilarious to me. It's funny.
Yeah, no idea.
All right. So as I mentioned, the new project is called Infinite Victory Loop. It's predictably great. Most of the tracks on here feature some combination of YL, Akai Solo, Fatboy Sharif with Pooty making a couple of appearances. Kind of hard to miss with those guys.
For sure.
I've heard the project was recorded in a somewhat unusual fashion. What can you tell us about how these recordings came to be?
It wasn't like we got up to make an album, honestly. I just wanted to get them all on songs together because those are the four dudes that I have the most music with, whether it's released or unreleased. I have hours of music with all those dudes, you know what I mean? So it's the most natural workflow, you know? So I'm like, I want to get everybody together and just make songs. So yeah, the session, it was definitely like ridiculously long. And on top of that, I had to pick everybody up. So I had to drive into the city, pick up Akai in Brooklyn, you know, come back through Manhattan. I probably got Fatboy first, actually, in Jersey. So, and then I had to do it at the end of the session, too. So however long the session was, it was an extra 4 hours of driving afterwards. That's one thing I always remember about that. But I mean, yeah, I don't know. It was just, it was very natural, like, honestly, because of, we all know each other, you know, it's just all jokes and everybody besides Fat Boy smoking weed, we were all, you know, everybody. So it was really fun.
So it's all of you in the same room together recording this in one
session. Nah, it was two sessions. It was two 12-hour sessions. Yeah. So the first session we did it, and we probably did, I don't even know how many songs, five songs. And I'm like, and nobody's really claiming the songs. So I just was like, yo, can I have these songs? And like, let's have another session. We do the same thing and we'll have a full tape. So that's how it ends up being like a Roper Williams album instead of anything else. You know what I mean? Like, instead of, you know, I don't know, The Firm or something like that.
I think the fact that you had to drive around and pick everyone up and drop everyone off just automatically.
Yeah, should make I'm like, you know what?
Honestly.
It's a lot of gas money and tolls.
So had you already like picked out beats for these sessions or?
In a way, yes, but there's no way to know. Like I never forced somebody to get on a beat. So I probably had a folder with like 100 beats or something like that. And then I would just go through them and go through them and go through them. And yeah, it was just like, okay, if we got two or three people to, you know, to agree on one, we did it, you know? I think that like we got, because it was like Palace has four, a few of them have everyone on it, but we weren't forcing everybody to get on everything. It was just like, all right, you guys like this beat, let's do it, you know?
Yeah. And were they writing there?
Everything was written in the studio. Like there was, I don't think anybody came with bars ahead of time. And on top of that, these dudes spent like at least 3 hours per session freestyling, you know, like it was bugged out. It was a lot of, I have videos from it. I don't know. I think about putting them out sometimes, but some of the beats are beats other people used. I don't know.
I mean, I think there would be people interested in seeing that. It sounds incredible.
Yeah. It was definitely one of the most fun sessions like ever, for real.
Well, I think the title both describes the way the project plays, with the last track moving pretty smoothly back into the first track. So it feels like a loop, but the whole thing also feels like a celebration. Like you're saying, you've teamed up with these guys that you seem to have a strong connection with. And it just kind of feels like, let's let these guys get together and take a victory lap.
Yeah.
Was that the intention in any way? Like celebrate your working relationships with each other?
I mean, not going into the music, but as far as like creating the project after we made the music, you know, like we might have made like 10 songs, you know, and then it was just about what songs make sense, like what songs fit. And then because we had some other songs that were like I guess not a celebratory feeling, you know what I mean? And I was I don't know, like, first of all, I have a thing about posse cuts that aren't like, I don't want to hear four like alpha males get in there and get like deep and introspective and share their feelings. It's just not going to happen in real life. You know what I mean? So yeah. I thought about it from that. Like, I don't want to hear it, you know? So I think that's why the album had to have that feeling, you know? Otherwise it would have been, I don't know. I just wouldn't have enjoyed it, you know? So yeah, I think that definitely kind of was the aim of it, like of having that type of energy.
For me, the sample on the first song, Blow My Mind, sets the tone for Infinite Victory Loop, because that's how I feel listening to the verses featured on this project. Every rapper on this project brings their best to the table. And every time I've listened to this project, I've walked away really appreciating each of these MCs more than I did before hearing Infinite Victory Loop. And I think your production plays a role in that. When you're doing a collaborative project, do you go into it intentionally creating space for rappers that allows listeners to experience the best part of their artistry?
Yeah, for sure. Like, basically, I feel like certain each rapper has different like moves and things that they are amazing at expressing, like and creating like that, just the feeling of. So I feel like the more people on the same song, what's it called, the Venn diagram or something? You got to get that part right in the middle. You know what I mean? So I feel like that's the trick to it. It's not having beats that like, oh yeah, this one dude is going to sound great on, but the other two dudes are going to sound out of place. You know what I mean?
So balancing that out.
Yeah, I think it's I definitely because like I said, I had a folder like 100 beats, so it's all like, all right, what would they all sound good on in my head? You know what I mean? And then, then you get room and you play them, and you're like, what was I thinking? Like, like I don't want to hear them like together on this, and they definitely don't want to hear it. You know what I mean? So you can really shrink that 100 beat list down to like 50.
Yeah.
Some of them I'm playing for 2 seconds, and no, not that. You know what I mean? Like, so yeah, for sure. Like, just trying to figure out the right pocket that everybody is natural in.
I hear you say that you didn't want this project to be one of those where a bunch of rappers are getting together, sort of being introspective and getting deep in their feelings. But it felt like people were really getting shit off their chest on this project. I mean, it sounds celebratory, but I also feel like people were getting into some shit. Yeah. I think these artists generally are reflective where it concerns their world and the one around them. But something feels a little different on Infinite Victory Loop. It's like there's this unspoken trust between you and these artists that further gave them a sense of freedom to speak their truths. And they do so in a way that you sort of speak to, right? That you've already spoken to. Like, they're doing so in a way that sounds happy. I don't know. Maybe that was the energy that was in the room when you were recording this. But yeah, so there's a bit of balance there. But how has the faith that artists have in you and the work that you create together established? You know, how is the space that you've given them founded? And is it equally important for you to go into a project feeling confident in the folks that you're working with?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, well, first it's like, you know, it starts with respect and just, you know, appreciation, like appreciating what they do, like, and respecting what they do and try to understand them as well, like the best you can, you know what I mean? Like, I started watching One Piece just to understand Akai better. You know what I mean? I'm like, I need to understand this. And as I'm watching it, I'm understanding him better. I'm like, he's really like this dude. He's really like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So things like that, like Fat Boy, like he'll have a bar like from the last chapter of Annie Wilkes' Misery or whatever. I'm like, all right, I gotta watch this movie. You know what I mean? Something like that. So I think it's just super important to just, you know, understand people. Like, you know what I mean? Like, what they hate, you know? You know, like, don't do what they hate. That's important. But yeah, I feel like this, it was definitely like, I feel like, you know, to me, the biggest flex of the album is that all these dudes, like, we have that much love for each other that they would give me these songs, you know what I mean? And because by giving me them the songs, they're trusting me like heavily, like very much so, to not make them look bad, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, they weren't like on me like, oh, this. They definitely let me know everything they think, but at the end of the day, they trusted me to put them in a good light, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
I really appreciate them for that. That was awesome.
Let's fast forward a little bit to the end of the album and talk about Hoopty for a minute.
The spawn lives again, magnificent, fog visiting, morgue entering, ghost dog, lizard grin, riders of the storm, golden arm, grimace twin, doors in the mist, shots at George Zimmerman, the postcard, Mozart, finish him, porn star from the barnyard, menacing, praise our Lord, warlord, whispering, attack of the swarm, all. Trembling, vocab great, lifted Conan weight, jigsaw fate, hope translate, pole shape similar to propane tank, slow mandate vision, Sandman grace. Ah, fuck out of here, nigga.
This is my new favorite Fat Boy Sharif verse. It is so fucking good. The way he's rhyming on here is just, I love it. You've been working with him for several years now, and you seem to have a strong connection and friendship with one another. What's it been like for you to see Sharif grow into his artistry, and how has that informed the work that you two do together?
I mean, it's, first of all, super fun. You know what I mean? Because it's like, it's just crazy. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's on that Woods album, produced by Preservation. You know what I mean? So it's crazy because it's like, I'm a producer, so I can't work with Preservation. You know what I mean? So it's like, but I get to live that like vicariously through him. You know what I mean? He's getting to work with Billy Woods. Like, I'm sure that was insane to him. You know what I mean? So it's fun. It's awesome to see like really the rise of all these guys and just what they've accomplished. And literally my biggest achievements are working with these dudes early. You know what I mean? Like that's like, it's just crazy to see how far they come and just how good they've gotten and how many different places they've taken things musically. Like with Fatboy specifically, like you said, like to me, it's like, all right, we did GLC, then he did the EP with Lungs, which was like some like, I don't even know, like futuristic dystopian. Then he did the album with No Face, which is like acid jazz or some. Then he did the album with Steel Tip Dove, which is like psych rock. You know what I mean? So it's fun to be like, all right, you went all these places, we can't go there now. You know what I mean? Like there's no looking back, so where should we go next? Like it's fun working in that type of like world creating environment. Like, all right, we need to create a whole new world. Like, you know what I mean? That's one of his best skills, is creating worlds, honestly.
Mm. Yeah.
And also to go back to what you first said, his verse on Hoopty, I love that verse so much. I literally love every verse on the album. I've heard them all so many times while working on it. I know them word for word, but the Hoopty verse, like his flow on that, the way he starts that verse, no one else in the world would have started a verse like that. It's just crazy.
Yeah, I wanted to bring up Hoopty too because of Sharif, and I just think it's one of the most unique verses I've heard from him, which is saying a lot, you know, because like you're saying, it feels to me like virtually every verse he spits is different, but this one just stood out to me. He sounds so loose and playful.
Yeah.
It made me wonder about how much direction you might give to the people you're recording. Do you find yourself like just letting folks do their thing, or you chime in here and there and give suggestions?
I feel like the best way to do it is through the music. Like the best example I can give, I think I was with YL like 2 days ago, and I showed him a beat, and in my head I have this idea for this song, but if I pitch it to him, it's gonna sound corny. So I just have to structure the song the way I hear it. Hmm. And tell them like, yo, I structured it this way. If you want to use it that way, that's one thing. And if not, if you hear it a different way, do that. You know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, they're all much better rappers than I am. So I got to trust them. But I definitely do try to, I try to guide them, but it's just through the beats I play, you know, or the beats I make for them. Because I am definitely a control freak and I want to manipulate everything, but I can't be too annoying about it. You know, otherwise the relationships won't last. Like I won't be able to keep working. You know what I mean? We won't be on our fifth project or whatever. Hmm. We won, and then you're like, all right, we hate each other. That was nice. That happens a lot in music.
Yeah. You mentioned Akai Solo earlier, and I'm glad that you did. I find myself really paying attention to what he's doing on this project. His verses have stuck with me, and they just get further ingrained in my brain the more I listen to this project. He's someone that often makes me think, and his work encourages me to analyze my own experiences so that I can use this to inform how I move in the world. He's just so good. So you've worked with Akai prior to this, and I'm wondering if he has had a similar impact on you, especially where it concerns your production. Is he an artist that has inspired you to dig deeper and really tap into your work?
For sure. The thing is, it's like when you get to work with someone regularly like that, it's like in GTA when you open up a new part of the map and it's like, oh man, now I could ride dirt bikes over here. Like, you know what I mean? And I can buy this little trailer and I can have the trailer park girlfriend. It gives me a reason to make certain stuff, you know, like to go in certain directions with the beats that I'm making. You know what I mean? Like, okay, I got this sample. I try to make beats for, you know, specific people as I make them. So just knowing Akai, like, okay, Akai's voice, the thing about like all four of the rappers is like their voices are so good. I think that's what makes it possible to just have them all together, because you couldn't like really find four better voices
to me. Like, I don't, they're all extremely strong. They're all different. They all stand out. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's so much presence in all of them.
Yeah.
So just different people's voices. It makes things, like when I'm making beats, I hear people's voices on them, you know? Like we did when me and Fatboy did the song with Bruiser Wolf, that was so fun because he has such a unique voice and flow. Every beat I'm making, like I can hear him on so clearly, you know, like he has such a crazy voice. So it was so fun to make, like I'm making beats for like a month trying, like, all right, we need to do the song with Bruiser. All those songs I was making, it was just fun listening to his voice over the beats, you know?
Yeah.
So every artist I work with consistently has an impact on me for sure, like on the music I make.
Shifting focus a bit, you know, we've been talking about this new project, but I want to ask you about your old Droog. You've had a handful of beats that have ended up on Droog projects, and some of them feature some pretty big names, like legends, like Black Thought, LP, Aesop, Elzai. It's almost like Droog like intentionally puts these big names on your beats. And I'm wondering what that's been like for you.
I mean, that is awesome. Like, I'm not going to lie. That is definitely like, it's crazy. You know what I mean? Like, you know how many Roots concerts, we've all been to like 8 Roots concerts, I'm sure. You know what I mean? Like, I know I have, you know what I mean? So, and like so many different experiences. I went with my dad and my sister, you know what I mean? I went with the other half of Roper, you know what I mean? Like all different experiences. And Black Thought is so good every single time. He don't miss any bars. Like, so to like, and like to hear him on that and on top of that, like, I don't know. I got to check through his whole discography, but there's not a single hi-hat, snare, kick, anything on that beat. I don't know if he's ever been on a beat with absolutely no drums, because he got the best drummer with him. So that was definitely just a highlight. Just like, that's a dream come true type thing right there. Like Black Thought specifically, like, that was crazy. You know what I mean? Super crazy. And then, I mean, all the other dudes you was talking, Elzai, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
that's crazy. You know, that's just nuts. I grew up obsessed with Dilla. You know what I mean? So you already know what that means in that case. And then all these other, you know what I mean? Like LP, like that's one of Fat Boy's goes right there. So I got to flex that. I'll still flex that on him from time to time. You know what I mean? Like, so it's awesome. And like, for some reason, my beats are good to hold up like a bunch of people. Like, you know what I mean? Like it's weird, but I definitely don't do that intentionally, but I guess overall I try to make beats that you can just keep listening to, you know?
Yeah. Was there any sort of conversation with Droog about who was going to be on these beats, or he just brought the idea to you?
Like, not ahead of time. Like, you know what I mean? I sent it to him, and then like, Pravda was in the first batch I ever sent him.
Mm.
Yeah. So it was like, I sent him Pravda specifically because I'm like, all right, Droog is cool with Doom. Like, this might be my only chance to ever work with Doom.
Mm.
So I sent him that, like, all right, him and Doom would go crazy on this. So I wasn't actually surprised when he, like, I was surprised, but when he got, you know, the other greatest rappers of all time type shit, I'm like, okay. Like, I guess that works too. Like, but I did know, like, ahead of time, like I said, it was the first time. So he didn't really know me. He didn't know. He can't tell me, like, I'm about to have this crazy surprise roster.
Yeah.
So he didn't tell me at first, because he don't know if I'm going to go to Twitter and say, oh my God, you know. But then we had to work on the song. We had to work on the song, like, on the beat as far as like turnarounds and sequencing stuff. So I think he told me at the end. Crazy though. I mean, when I like listening to that for the first time, yeah, because I remember listening to like the draft for the first time and being like, what? I literally, like, I know where I was standing type shit.
What's it like working with Droog in general? And you mentioned Twitter. Has he blocked you on Twitter yet?
Nah. I try to not get blocked by him. Sometimes I'll be wanting to like reply to him and I'll be like, I might get blocked for this. Just because you don't know what you're gonna get blocked for.
Right,
but
right.
I might get blocked for this, but
if you're lucky, all your handles will get blocked.
Nah, but working with Droog is awesome. Like I said, it's like, all right, that's another crazy voice and style to be like, okay, I can make beats that go in this direction, you know what I mean? Like, and have like a really good place for them, like someone who's going to kill it. So it's definitely fun, like, you know, just putting together batches and trying to think of, because Droog himself is someone that I listened to in high school, you know what I mean? Like, I listened to Droog, like, I remember Combat Jack talking about him on his podcast, and the whole, like, is this Nas and all them, Dallas Penn, and then we're talking about it. So I remember that. So working with him, that's awesome too. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just on some fan shit, you know, on some, this is what I, like, in high school, like, you would have told me that would have been fire. Like, I'm like, all right, or like, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. So.
In the interview I read, you were asked about your collaborations and how they happened and whether you actively shop your work. Now, I just want to, you know, say first that this was a Roper Williams interview, so maybe you didn't specifically offer this commentary, but part of the response said, I have a decent amount of beats out now, so the music shops itself at this point, and I let people hit me up. What do you think draws people to your work when they're looking to collaborate with you?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I mean, because it could be so many different, it's always different stuff. You know, I get people who want super demented music because they heard Gandhi Loves Children. And then I get people, you know, that want super introspective stuff because they heard Navy Blue, or, you know, or people that want this. I'm not gonna lie, there's a lot of people that are like YL clones. Just that alone, like, you know what I mean? He's a blueprint for a lot of people, I feel. So I feel like that is one of the things. You'd be surprised the people that that listen to Y and copy him way up the industry, like weird industry shit. So yeah, I think just because I've worked with Y. Y's the first person that ever released anything that we produced. Like, so technically the first artist we work with. Like that's from the start. That's been who has connected me with a lot of people, and that's also who taught me how to work with people and just to have it like a collaborative spirit. Like, Y has a, like, he's super, like, he's just good at collaborating with people. I don't know, he, like, just being around him and just seeing how he kind of chooses who, like, who would sound good with him and all that type of stuff, because he'll collab with people. He has collabs with crazy people, but he might not have liked the song and he didn't put it out, like, you know what I mean? Like, he's not thirsty with it either. Like, I learned that. Like, I could have put all 10 songs on the album and it wouldn't have sounded cohesive or something. I don't know. Yeah, I feel like a lot of people hear me through Y. And then, you know, Akai, it, like, as well as his fans. I was talking to Y about it. Like, Akai's fans and Fatboy's fans and Y's fans, they mirror them. They mirror who they are as people. So, like, Akai's fans and just the people who we, like, who, you know, they might want to be Akai or Fatboy, like, they're super extreme as well, or they're super, like, outgoing, like Akai, like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
YL's fans are calm, like, you know what I mean? Like, they're laid back. So it's like a YL fan is gonna, like, he might like and retweet it. The Fatboy Akai fan is gonna quote tweet it with exclamation points, like, they're fans, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I wanted to do a show with everybody on the tape, but just to see all the different bands together, you know what I mean? Because I think it would be funny.
Don't let that dream die. Yeah. That would be great.
Yeah, I got to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In hearing you just talk about this and answering the question, I'm wondering if people are drawn to your work because you work with a variety of different artists. I mean, all three of those people that you just talked about are not the same in any way. They're very different. So I'm wondering if that's part of the appeal of Roper Williams production.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like, it's just, there's a wide variety. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of places to find my name.
Yeah.
So it's not like, it's not just you're into one type of thing, so you know who I am. It's like, oh yeah, like, you know, I got songs with Maxo. You know what I mean? I got songs with Sifu. I got songs with Jamonte. You know what I mean? Like, Morpheus, you know, I got songs with a lot of different people who are, they sound different. They have different fans.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's why I love being a producer too, because I get to just make, you know, what I like, and I like everything. Being a producer is the shit.
Your production often sounds emotive to me, like expressive. You mentioned Dilla earlier, and it actually kind of reminds me of Dilla in that way. Like your use of samples and the space around them seems like a clear attempt to express something. And I think that's somewhat unique. I read an interview you did. It might be the same one that you're referring to, E, with Respect Due a couple of years ago, where you said that your beats are often a reflection of what you're feeling at the time you made them. So I've been thinking about that. And then I think about how you might end up giving them to a rapper who ends up writing about whatever the beat may inspire in them, which I think is kind of a beautiful thing. But I also wonder if it's ever difficult to like part with these beats that might represent mm-hmm. something very personal to you.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I'm a hoarder, so it's difficult to part with anything. But I feel like certain beats, it's like I want one person on them. I'm not going to tell them that. I never put pressure on them. Like, yo, I really would love to hear you on the beat. Like, I want them to just like the beat. So I never like really specify anything like that. Sometimes like once that passes, it'll be like, I don't know who to give this to. You know what I mean? Like, and I might end up not giving it to anyone ever, you know? So it is a thing, but I've learned too, like, because I think I've had two hard drives break. So it's like, damn, like I had a hard drive break not too long ago, and I was happy that I gave Y all those beats for his last album, because I would have lost them. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like Planet Unfaithful would have got lost if I hadn't already sent the stems to Dub. I was like, man, I'm happy that, you know, these songs got play in motion. So it just, you know, it reminds me like, all right, let's put it in motion. Don't try not to hoard everything, yeah. You know?
Yeah. Some of these things are meant to be out there in the world. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really enjoy your instrumental projects though. I mean, to me, they might be the most emotive production that I've heard from you. They carry a consistent mood throughout. I especially enjoy the two that you put out this year, and I'm not remembering the titles, so I apologize for that. But
okay.
I'm wondering about those instrumental projects. When you assemble them, are you intentionally trying to create a cohesive project?
For sure. Back to Blocked is like, that's a literal story. So I've never actually done that before with instrumentals, where it's like, I want to tell this story. Like, you know what I mean? Of this is just a real story. Like, you know what I mean? So like from the beginning to the end, it is what it is. Like, you know what I mean? Like all the vocal clips and all the samples themselves and everything is trying to depict a feeling, you know what I mean? Without just literally saying it. And then, what's it called? The other, well, I don't even know what this beat tape is called. The one with the grass. And the,
yeah.
The,
yeah.
Oh yeah. Recap. Yeah. See, Recap was just like, I did like purposely choose things that felt cohesive, but Recap was actually, basically like my greatest hits of this beat tape run, where I put out a beat tape every month or whatever. So but I didn't want people to know that, because nobody gave a fuck about the beat tapes in the first place. So I was like, let me just put them all together, and it'll just be like one good beat tape instead of like 12 beat tapes that are okay. I did that, and I did that was inspired by what's it called? The Outkast Greatest Hits CD, which is one of the things I was thinking about discussing, because that's an album I grew up on, and like I was a little kid, so I didn't know that this wasn't an album, that this was a Greatest Hits CD. I'm like, damn, these are the best rappers I ever heard in my life. Like, this is incredible. How do they have all these songs together? Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's just hit after hit after amazing. And then in between, it's like the best album cuts ever. Like, it's insane. So I didn't know that, you know what I mean? And they didn't call it a greatest hit CD. I think it's called Andre 3000 and Big Boy Presents mm-hmm. Outkast.
Yeah.
And they had they added their own intro for it, you know what I mean? And they added, I think, Moving Cool. I think that was added. But yeah, like that was inspired by that. I just called it Recap because it's like, all right, it's a greatest hit CD, but I'm not going to advertise that it is. People don't really, nobody realized, because nobody cared about the beat tape. So I'm like, all right. Let's repackage this.
It worked for me.
But I did pick beats that felt cohesive with each other, though.
Yeah. All right. Let's change gears and talk about Snoop Dogg and Doggy Style.
With so much drama in the LBC, it's kinda hard being Snoop Dogg double G, but I somehow, some way, keep coming up with funky ass shit like every single day. May I kick a little something for the G's and make a few ends as I breeze through. 2 in the morning and the party still jumping cause my mama ain't home. I got bitches in the living room getting it on and they ain't leaving till 6 in the morning. So what you wanna do? Shit, I got a pocket full of rubbers and my homeboys do too. So turn off the lights and close the doors. But
for what?
We don't love them hoes.
Yeah.
So we gon' smoke an ounce to this. G's up, hoes down, while you motherfuckers bounce to this.
Every episode we ask our guests to pick an album that is a sort of personal favorite, personal classic, or influential in some way. As you mentioned, there was some debate. We're talking about Outkast. We're talking about Snoop. I think there was a Dilla album in the mix.
J Love Japan,
yeah. We settled on Snoop, which I imagine everyone is quite familiar with at this point in history. But I wonder if you could tell us, what do you remember about the first time you listened to this album?
Yeah, I wasn't like alive, like oh yeah, I'm listening to this in the club or anything like that. I wasn't, you know, I don't know if I was actually alive, but this album my dad loved, I know for sure. And like, so this album, like, I think it's the South Park movie, like, you know when they see Terrence and Phillip for the first time and they leave and they know how to curse now and they know all they know everything that's you know what I mean, like this album was kind of like that to me, like, you know what I mean, like it was like, okay, like, oh damn, some of it was like literally too explicit, like for my young brain, that I was like, I'm not ready for this song yet. Yeah. Like, let's put Jenny back on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So because of that, it also aged great because it's like later on, it's like, okay, now I like some of these other songs because I'm more ready to hear them. It's not like scary sounding, you know? So it like, to like, this is an album like this, like that Outkast album as well, which I think that Outkast album also on some Terrence and Phillip. Terrence and Phillip shit had titties on the cover on the CD itself.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, it was the purple CD.
Yeah.
So those two CDs were definitely my Terrence and Phillip. but yeah, I mean, educational, informative, like, you know what I mean? Like, and like from a production standpoint, like you couldn't ask for a better album to grow up on, you know?
Yeah.
Literally, it's masterclass, like, you know what I mean? Like crazy.
Yeah.
Just what he did with it, like I feel like I was listening through it like 2 months ago and I realized, I'm like, yo, Snoop barely does any choruses on this. Like he might do one chorus for real and then he might like say like murder was the case that they gave me, like, you know what I mean, but the chorus is a choir singing and
yeah,
all, like the production is insane, like, and dudes talking in the back, like the way Dre set it up was so perfect for Snoop, because what Snoop, like, you can define Snoop with the word effortless. Like, so when you set up a rapper like that, where you don't have to do the hooks, it sounds like you're not even trying. You're just flowing. You're skating through this project. Like you're never exerting extra energy. Like it just adds on to the effortlessness of his skill set. You know what I mean? Like the production, like, just so crazy.
It's real funny to hear you talk about like the education that you got from this and like your young brain like not being ready for it, because I was maybe like 12 when I first heard this album, you know, because I heard it in 93, maybe younger, I don't know, but what I remember is not understanding a lot of it. And I remember my parents somehow like seeing the cover and being like, do you even know what Doggy Style is? And being like, no, tell me what it is. No, you're too young for that. You'll figure it out later. And then as an adult or getting older, like listening to Ain't No Fun and being like, holy shit, I can't believe I listened to this when I was 12 years old or whatever.
For real. Wild. I mean, and it was so amazing. Like it's introducing you to things with such confidence and such like style, like that is just it overwhelms you when you're that age. It's crazy.
Two questions. Well, and maybe one question and one comment, but how, so you said that this is one of your dad's favorites. How old were you exactly when you first heard this?
It's hard to tell. I'm not good with like, I mean, probably like 7 or 8, like
seven. God damn.
I mean, my age.
Oh my God.
You know what I mean? Like, maybe 10. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, my parents, they listen to music. They're not musicians, but they had the crazy CD collection. Like I always say, like they separated. They never talked bad about each other, except your mother has this James Brown instrumental CD. It's mine. You know, things like that. Like, you know what I mean? Oh yeah. Like I never found it again. Like things like that. Like, you know what I mean? So like it was serious. Like it was very serious, you know?
Yeah, no, I get it.
But yeah, like the hip hop they love was all production masterclasses, Public Enemy, De La Soul, you know, shit like that.
Yeah.
That's fucking crazy. Number one. Number two, I think I was really young when I was exposed to Snoop. Like, I definitely did not have this album. There's no way in hell I would have been allowed to listen to this. I don't even know where I would have gotten a copy. But when videos, I mean, this is when videos were all the rage. And so I remember seeing Gin and Juice, and even the edited video was probably something I should not have been watching. I just remember there's a scene when they're at the drive-in and the car is fogged up and there's like feet pressing against the window because they're obviously in the back like fucking. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just kind of like, what are they doing? Like, so there was like shit like that. Yeah. And I mean, I don't think they edited I Got a Pocket Full of Rubbers and My Homeboys Do Too. Like, I don't know if I knew what that was when I was a kid, but I was still exposed to that. So even the edited version seemed like a little too much.
Yeah. Oh no, the edited version, because they were slick with it back then too. So like,
yeah.
They would, you know, Dre had them go in the studio and do the edited version,
right,
where you're saying the same thing, but you're just saying it cleaner.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
It's literally context. All you need to do is hear the dirty version once. And because you know the clean version, now you have the context for it. And now you know what the dirty word means.
Yeah.
You know, things like that.
Yeah. And those were moments where education. I was like, oh, shit. I can't. Oh, man. It's wild. It's funny that we all had that same experience.
Yeah.
I feel like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to explain this well, but from the sound to like the content, it's almost like when Snoop was growing up, he observed, like, he would like walked in on like his parents having these wild ass parties. And he was hanging out with his uncles and their, his parents' friends, and listening to music. And then he grew up and like wrote about it and like captured the sound from that time. Like, that's what I picture. Yeah.
They paint such a crazy picture on the album. Snoop don't even rap till like the third track, I don't think. And I think it is Gin and Juice that he starts rapping. Like,
yeah.
The way they painted the picture was just crazy. Like, and I think Snoop also, like, his childhood, I think he moved around a lot and from like literally like the South, the Midwest, the West. I think he's from everywhere. So like, I think that helped him. I think that helped him somehow. Like, it literally made him super universal. Like, He understood a lot of different stuff, it seemed like. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it helped him be a natural.
To your point, E, like, this album really took the kind of like gangster socialite thing that Dre did with The Chronic to like a new level. Like,
yeah.
Like Dre is almost like you're standing outside the party. Snoop, you're in it. Like, you're standing in it, which I hadn't really ever thought about before, but I kind of like.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the party is in a house. It's not like, it's not an event. The party is at somebody's house.
No, it's Gin and Juice. It really is Gin and Juice. Like, that's the album.
That's part of the production masterclass of it. Like,
yeah.
How did he make us all experience the same like vision of it and educational process? Like, the manipulation of the audience and the listener, like, is crazy. Mm-hmm. Like with this album.
Yep,
like, one thing I noticed, it's like, all right, the album's called Doggy Style. It's highly sexualized, obviously. You can't have it be all dudes. You can't have it. Mm. So they literally started off with Lady of Rage rapping.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think she has the first verse and the first song.
Yeah.
So that's out the way off the rip, you know what I mean? And so then she has another verse later, and then they have, like, you know, the dramatics on a hook where it's like R&B, like they cover the bases super well with that. I don't know.
What's your overall relationship with Death Row? Are you a fan of the entire outfit?
Nah, I can't say that. I'm not like super West Coast out. And also, like, that's not like, I don't know, like, I do like Tupac and Snoop together. I will say that. Mm-hmm. Two of America's Most Wanted. That's one of the best songs ever.
Yeah.
But overall, I mean, you know how it is. I was from the I'm from the East Coast, so it's like, fuck it. I grew up with, you know, Jadakiss and Styles P instead of, you know, Corrupt and Warren G, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
It's just like that. The people that are like Styles P and Jadakiss and Sheek, like as a group, like they're so amazing. You know what I mean? But like people from the West Coast don't seem to get it as much. Hmm. So I feel like that it's just a natural thing where it's like, you know, people get Jay-Z on both, or they got Biggie on both, you know, but. Like, to me, when I was growing up, there had to be some type of East Coast feeling to it for me to like super dive into it. I feel like I forget what song it is. It might be Dog Eat Dog World. It sounds like a beat that could have been on like the Fifth or Sixth Tribe album, you know, maybe minus like one sound or something. Mm-hmm. There is like East Coast, like it's very easily adaptable.
Yeah, I feel like some of the like the funk or soul, or even like jazziness, some of these beats like translates to East Coast stuff.
Yeah, but exactly.
But I agree though, like the deeper you dig into like the Death Row circle, like the Dog Pound and whoever else, like you get a little further away from those things.
Yeah. It's more pure regional. Yeah. Like, you know
mm-hmm.
what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Which is fire, but when you're not from that region, it just doesn't resonate the same way.
Right.
Yeah. I wondered that, like, I mean, I don't, you probably couldn't speak to this when the album came out in 93, but like in your community now, and when you were growing up and you were like listening to hip hop with your friends, were people fucking with this album? Were people mentioning this album?
I mean, I think so because of the singles, you know, it has such classic singles. It has such like I know Dr. J is one of the best basketball players ever. I never seen a game. I know Jordan is one of the best basketball players ever, but he was on the Wizards when I seen him. You know what I mean? Like, and he wasn't, you know? So I think Snoop has that. Like, when you have certain level of singles, you know what I mean? Like, it just carries your name. So, I mean, this album has like four or five crazy singles. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just pick which one you want to live with, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just counted five. I mean, I don't know if they were officially singles, but there are five tracks on this. There's 13 tracks. Five of them I remember hearing on the radio all the time in the D.C. area. So,
yeah, I mean, it's like these songs are like, it's like Freebird. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like shit like that. You're going to hear it on the radio. Like, it's super classic. And they all hold up because it's produced so well. And Snoop's flow is time. Snoop kept rhyming the same way. He still raps this way. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it just sounds timeless. And not only does he still rap this way, half of the time, like, the flows are, like, damn near 80s flows. You know, like, late 80s. So it's, like, it goes to show how crazy his voice is. I think Snoop has, like, he got a top five voice at least in hip-hop all the time. You know? And I feel like people don't give credit, like, to me, like people like Snoop and Jadakiss, like that's like Aretha Franklin and you know what I'm saying? Like Diana Ross, that people don't respect rappers' voices being that amazing, like because it seems so natural. But it's like, do you think Aretha Franklin, there was any path in her life that she wasn't going to be that great of a singer?
Mm. Yeah.
I'm sure she got some type of lessons and it helped, whatever. She was going to be one of the best singers regardless. Like it's a natural talent. Like Snoop's voice is like, it's on that level. Like it's literally like that. It's that good.
Yeah. It's definitely one of the most unique voices in hip hop I think I've ever heard. The smoothness of it is just like, yeah. It's unreal.
It's crazy. It's good. It's just crazy. You know what I mean? It's like Michael Jackson still sounds good. Like, you know what I mean? Like Thriller still sounds good. It doesn't sound dated. Like,
yeah.
Like even though like he's doing his, like, he's doing his gimmicks, Michael Jackson with the hee hee and all that stuff. Those, the gimmicks still sound good. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Snoop's gimmicks still sound good. They don't sound dated. Like, mm-hmm. and it might just be because it's him doing it, you know? Right. And he just sounds that good.
Yeah.
To me, like, I always get in debates with people because I got Snoop in my top 10. Like, and people get pissed off, you know what I mean? Because he's not, you know, he's not Tech N9ne or something. But, like, first of all, they say the whole, like, a large portion of the album was freestyled. You can't name another rapper who you would put in that conversation of best rappers of all time with a freestyled album that has 5 hit singles and is an undeniable classic. Like, you know what I mean? Or that has a 30-year career that has hits maybe not nonstop, but every few years for sure. Like, you know what I mean? Like, also, he came up battling. Like, you know what I mean? He's like one of the first rap superheroes. I think this album did like 2 million pre-sale or something like that. I think because of like he got so like commercialized, he's the voice of Corona. He's chilling on the beach. He literally like saved Corona during coronavirus, right?
He's on the Skechers billboard at the train station that I go to.
Wearing Skechers.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and then, you know, he just softens his image a little, like, you know what I mean? Which he literally said he was going to do. I seen an Arsenio interview where he was like, yeah, like he was like the positive shit. He was like, I'll start that in like 15 years. Mm. Like, I'll be more on that then. You know what I mean? And like, you know, he started doing Sensual Seduction. He raps on that. You know what I mean? Who else is killing that song like him? You know, like, I don't know. That's just my case for Snoop as at least a top 10 MC. Yeah. Man, because there's not that many, like, if you put them, like, you could pick a rapper, put them in their prime and have them battle Snoop. How many people would actually win? Like, if you do some type of decathlon event, the only event Snoop is going to lose to most rappers is, like, the lyrical challenge. Like
the technical.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't even say technical. Like, you know what I mean? Snoop can do technical stuff. You know what I mean? He has songs. I mean, he can't, like, he's not a part of De La Soul. But, you know, beautiful, he rhymes beautiful the whole time. You know what I mean? Like, he does do stuff like that. So he does stuff. So if it's a rap decathlon and there's all these events, he's not losing a majority of them to 99% of rappers ever. So
that's interesting.
That's my case for Snoop as a top 10.
You said Sharif wants to fight you when you bring this up.
Absolutely. For sure. For sure. Because because when we debate, we go way further. So, and then I start just saying things to piss him off. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
I just pick any of his favorite rappers and I'm like, Snoop is better, you know? So, we fight about everything. So,
I don't know that I've ever seen Snoop battle anybody.
Yeah.
He
battled like when he was young. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
right. Like, is there footage of that?
Because he freestyled. You know what I mean? So, they said he battled, I'm forgetting it right now. But yeah, he has like some like classic battles back in the day. They say it was going long and all types of stuff like that. He could freestyle nonstop. So, and it's also like one of his biggest skills is having mass appeal. So you win a battle by just winning the crowd over, you know?
True.
You didn't see him battle DMX on Versus?
They battled or they just rapped alongside each other?
I'm just joking. It's not a battle.
I feel like they were sitting in the studio chilling, listening to each other's songs and drinking.
The only two Versus, the real Versus battles were
Gucci.
Yep, go ahead. There was three because these dudes started fighting on stage. Bone Thugs and 3-6, but then
I see that shit. Oh no, I did see the aftermath.
Yeah. Yeah, they started fighting, and then they kept the show going too. Yeah. Which I do respect. And then I don't know if you've seen the Scott Storch battle in Manny Fresh, but Manny Fresh was using all types of crazy. He had like interludes that were like just evil, like just bringing up Scott Storch's like drug use and shit. It was like, my damn, interludes
damn.
On the
producer battle.
Wow. Yeah, those are the three true versus wars.
No, I would even say the Locks and the Diplomats. Yeah, because that shit was I feel like they were like, oh, we're just kidding, but I don't think they were.
No, no, there was like, there was definitely a few heated moments when he was kicking him and doing all the beach chair stuff. And
yeah, man. Yeah. But
that was a heartbreaking day, man. I don't even want to talk about that for real. I said I love the Locks, but I also love Dipset too. Like, you know what I'm saying? So I just did, like, to me, like, why wouldn't they come out to Dipset Forever or something like that? Like, I wish I could have picked the songs. That's all I say. Mm-hmm. And also, Jadakiss was on Adderall. Nobody was going to stop him anyway. I was watching that battle and I'm like, yo, I think he's on Adderall. And at a point in the battle, he says he's on Adderall. He says something about Adderall. I swear to God.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, yo, he has to be on Adderall. He's rapping so perfectly. Like, it was crazy. He's
that focused.
It was wild.
Yeah.
Wild time.
Yeah, for sure.
That was a good strategy. He said, I'm going to do a little Adderall before this. We're good. We're good, Styles. Don't worry about this one.
You've mentioned Doggy Style being like a masterclass in production. What do you think you've like taken from it and like incorporated in your own work?
I mean, I feel like one of the strengths of Doggy Style is like the re-listenability of it. You can just listen to the songs. Like, they don't force things. Things kind of move quickly throughout the songs. Things are in and out. You know what I mean? Like, even if there's big buildup, it's still like, you know, it's moving. It moves. So I feel like when it comes to like having like, cause I like, I'm laid back. I like laid back music. So when it comes to that, to make laid back music, but not have it be boring, that seems like a strategy. Honestly, Dre does like so many things, like just studying Dre. And he has like a lot of like routines that he does with rappers. Like if you notice a lot, like a school of Dre thing is that like rappers, it starts off with like, they'll do four bars of like some type of hook. Like it's not a hook, but it's like a pre-verse that acts as a hook. Mm. Kendrick did it a lot. M did it. 50 did it. Dre has a lot of tricks that he does that is just like, when you just listen to it a lot, you're like, wow. He does so many things that are so effective. Mm. You know, it's like, damn, this shit works perfectly. And then he does things you try and you can't do. Like, you know what I mean? They did a cover song on this album. How many times has that been repeated? Like,
yeah. Gotta say what's up to my nigga Slick Rick. For those who don't like it, eat a dick. But for those who with me, sing that shit. Cause it go a little something like this. Lordy dawdy, we likes to party. We don't cause trouble. We don't bother nobody. We're just some niggas who on the mic. And when we rock up on the mic, we rock the mic. For all my dogs, keeping y'all in health. Just to see you smile and enjoy yourself. Cause it's cool when you cause a cozy conditioning, which we create, cause that's our mission. So listen close to what we say, because this type of shit happens every day. I woke up around 10 o'clock in the morning. I gave myself a stretch up, a moaning, yawning. Went to the bathroom to wash up. I threw some soap on my face and put my hands up on a cup and said, mirror, mirror on the wall. Who is the top dog of them all?
I'm sure people have put budgets towards trying to make cover songs and have not been able to put them out. Like, the one on the Black Star album is fire, that most did. But other than that, like, Lottie Dottie is like, and I don't know because I wasn't there, but that seems like it's the first cover song in rap. I could be wrong, but I don't think of any that predate that.
It's hard for me to think of any. Yeah,
I can't think of any that predate. And it's done so perfectly, and it's done like he snoopified it. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
and they did the Dr. Dre thing on it, like, which is so perfect. And it's funny that both the covers that come to mind for me, at least, are Slick Rick ones with him and the one on the Black Star album.
Yeah, that is funny. Well, you've made a compelling case for Snoop as a
is Snoop in your guys' top 10 yet or not? Has he cracked the top 10?
No. Not for me. I hear what you're saying, though. I can't. I respect what you're saying. Like, I'm not going to shit on anybody's top 10, top 5.
Like, I have a solidified top 10, like, written on a paper. I'm about to, like, okay, we have Miles. But, like,
yeah, PowerPoint.
I probably have a top 10 that's about 20 people, but
yeah,
he's definitely in it for sure. Like, and also, no one ever agrees, but that's why I got it. That's why I got to come out here and make my case and try to persuade the people.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, you got Rod.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, we had Mr. Motherfucking Esquire on the show a while ago, and he made a very compelling case for LL Cool J being one of the greatest rappers ever. And I hadn't thought about it, and the way he talked about it, I was like, ah.
But the thing is, like, LL is someone who I have heard people say is the GOAT, and he has a similar case to Snoop, where it's like the dude's career never ends.
Yeah,
he has Love You Better is still a good song. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Headsprung or not, Love You Better is still great. So, and then he was like, Snoop is a rap superhero. LL was a rap superhero for sure.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You mm-hmm. know, like I'm sure when he came out, like, it didn't even seem real. Like, he was like, just, you know, LL is actually, that's another album I grew up, not album, but albums I grew up on. Like, you know, he had songs that really appealed to kids too. Milky Cereal.
Right.
Shit like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he was super perverted and sexual too. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? Like, super. So mm-hmm. he has a lot of Snoop parallels, honestly.
Yeah, but my point is, you know, just the perspective alone is appreciated, you know. So I'm probably going to be thinking about Snoop differently. I will say, just as far as, like, his uniqueness, you know, one of one. Mm-hmm. There's nobody else like Snoop. And that, I think that there's something to be said for that.
Yeah, that's definitely, you know, and it's not like people haven't tried, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just you can't do it unless you're him,
right?
Like, so that's my case. I rest my case.
Well, Roper, thank you so much for
thanks for having me on, man.
Being willing to join us, really have appreciated this conversation. Infinite Victory Loop out.
Not yet.
Is out now. Anything you want to let people know about where to find it, what to look out for, anything like that?
I'm gonna do vinyl for it for sure. So
nice.
No,
that's you know, I think I'm gonna shoot a video for Zeitgeist. So, because I just love that song, I love their verses on that so much.
Yeah.
You know, it'll still be getting rolled out in different ways and stuff. And then I got so much other stuff coming. I appreciate you guys listening to the, you know, album and tuning in and breaking it down like that. That was definitely fire.
Yeah.
So I appreciate you guys having me on, for sure.
Of course. Yeah. Really appreciate your work.
Yes.
Thank you.
Definitely. Yeah. Glad to have you.
No doubt, yo.
All right, folks. Well, this has been The Next Movement. Thanks for listening.
Peace.
Spiritual realm escape measuring. Excess heavenly. Swarm. Tainted aqua rivers with no wetting. Craftsman suspended. Massive agenda. Stab December. Sarcastic feeling. Passionate thinker. Past abundance. Kidnapped in a dungeon. My replica frame. Electrocuted in the 1800s. Ponder marbles at night. From remarkable height. Stigmata wounds. Asiatic. Spark of the flight. Eyesight missing. Tide all crimson, blind eye Christian, Zeitgeist mission, Peter Parkage pullets, harm and footage, remaining bullets display to men.
Okay. Yo, the beginning of the worst, like a fresh curse, moving me and gang, gone chasing after gang, a lower media descendant. We purging them things, we beheading kings without rehearsing. Let it be if it must bust, trust, rust elude me. I let it ring even when the injuries is fresh, even when scars sting. Stress got my soul wailing, familiar with taking a breath.